You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the Putting the Sell in NWSL Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
Best one ever. Dude, you knew you see, you gave it away because you were smiling as you were saying it. You knew you had a good one there. Or was there even a part of you saying, if he criticizes this one, then I cannot please him ever?
Oh, that's a part of me for sure.
Okay.
I feel that way often.
But you know what? No. You see, but now you know what you need to bring. You knew you did well. You planned. You didn't go over the top. You knew this one on content and creativity alone could carry the day. Putting the sell in NWSL. That was really good, Evan Novy Williams.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that.
Wait, I complimented you on Twitter the other night, working a story with you. I said, what a pleasure. And now I'm giving you this. This has got to stop.
Seriously.
It's a gush fest.
For the other shoe to drop at some point. Yeah,
exactly. I'm going to make a list of all the things you've done wrong recently. Hold on. I'll air that out later.
Busy week for us in the past 7 days on NWSL news, Scott. Sportico broke two big pieces of news last week, one being the San Diego Wave being sold by Ron Burkle, a two-part deal, which we can get into, values the club at $113 million, the highest price ever agreed to pay for a control stake in an NWSL team. A day later, you and I reported that the board at Angel City has retained a bank to look into a few options, including the possible sale of a control stake of that team. That is the most valuable club in NWSL and would almost certainly fetch a larger valuation than what we saw in San Diego. And then on Monday morning, OL Reign, the owners of OL Reign announced that the talks that they were having with Carlisle and the Seattle Sounders had reached an agreement, $58 million deal there for Carlisle and the Sounders to take over that NWSL team up in Seattle. Man, a lot of news here, Scott. Some related, some not. What is your takeaway from the season starting and three huge pieces of M&A news happening all simultaneously?
First of all, I would not say man, a lot of news. I'd say woman, a lot of news, for sure. It's what we have said all along. I mean, it's funny. People say to us all the time, how do you cover women's sports? Like, we hear that a lot. How do you cover women's sports? And I think really the best thing we can do for the industry, and again, I remind everyone, we do this a lot when we deal with people who work at the leagues and the teams, we remind, we are not advocates. This is not our role here in the ecosystem. We are journalists. What we are here to do is chronicle, explain, tell the good stories. So the best thing we do is cover women's sports like we would any other sport. If it is a business, a sports business story that deserves to be told, and that would include with this explosion we're seeing in what people are paying, there's a reason why we turned Kurt Bodenhausen loose on NWSL valuations. Because we saw this is a great story. What is behind? What are the driving pillars here? Why are these franchises exploding in value? Why are sophisticated investors trying to get in at serious multiples to what anybody was 2-3 years ago? I mean, Blitzer got in. He had the option on the Utah franchise for $2 million.
Yeah, and that was higher than it was originally, right? Originally, yeah. It was like 500,000.
This reminds me of like Beckham MLS, where he had the option to get a franchise for 25 mil. That was part of his deal coming over, knowing that his presence alone would drive interest in the league. And now you've got, of course, Messi here, and he's got a piece of every Apple subscription driving valuations for the league. So we're just telling good business story. We're not covering it because we're like, oh, look, this is a women's sports story we have to pay attention to. This is a damn good sports business story. There are reasons for the explosion at one franchise that may not be the same for the other. But yep. This is, in a whole, this is where the league is going.
And let's give some hard numbers here. Both Angel City and San Diego bought into this league 3 years ago, $2 million expansion fee. Right. And as we said, San Diego just sold for $113 million. Angel City, if a control stake does get sold, is going to sell for significantly more than that.
I predict the 180, just where Kurt was.
Yeah, 180, maybe even more. Yep. Wouldn't be shocked if that begins with a 2.
Ooh.
The OL Reign, the OL Group, which owns Lyon in France.
Michelle Kang.
They bought that women's team for $3.5 million, I think, back in 2019. And now they're selling it for $58 million to the Sounders and Carlisle Group. Really, anywhere you look in NWSL, the numbers are staggering. It's teams were worth low single digit millions 3 years ago, and now they are worth at the low end $50 million, and at the high end, as we said, maybe even 200. And one of the things that we laugh about, talk about a lot, it's one of the principal rules of economics, Scott. Scarcity drives value. There is almost every NWSL team has either sold or been a brand new team in the past 3 years. I think of the 15 teams, including Boston, in the league right now, I believe North Carolina and New York are the only two that don't have a different controlling owner than they had in 2020. That's pretty shocking. And through it all, we've seen these valuations soar, even though there's not much scarcity right now if you're interested in buying an NWSL team.
And by the way, though, we're only listing the sales, or at least the deals. We also had Kansas City open the first women's-specific stadium. And that is a big moment. In any league, but a big moment for the NWSL when you have a women's team getting its own, you know, specific stadium for their use. And, you know, boy, I got to tell you, Angie and Chris Long, they were just giddy and over the moon that they opened that facility. I'm curious to see what we do in terms of the revenue versus last season to next season or this season when Kurt does the valuations again.
Another thing that is happening in NWSL, obviously, but happening across sports, the growth of private equity investors. The league, as you and I talked about earlier this month or even last month, changed its ownership rules, codified its rules around private equity funds that own more than one stakes in more than one franchise. And we can start with the news of this week on Monday. Carlisle and the Seattle Sounders buying OL Reign or Seattle Reign is now the name of the team. From what I understand, Carlisle is the majority of the money in this transaction. Unclear if they're going to have control of the team, and that's a nuance that's important, and we can discuss that vis-a-vis another team in a little bit.
Should we triangulate with David Rubenstein and the Orioles in some way? Should we do this?
Separate. This is a firm investing, not David himself. Obviously, David himself bought the Baltimore Orioles a few months ago. That strikes out as interesting to me. We had Jessica Berman, the commissioner of NWSL, on this show last year, about exactly a year ago, Scott, when Bay FC, the new San Francisco expansion team, was sold, the majority investor there being Sixth Street. And she laid out for us all of the things they needed to get from Sixth Street to make them comfortable with a private equity fund being the majority and the control owner of a team. It's rare. That doesn't exist in any other major U.S. sports league. NWSL charted new territory in that. And as she said, she needed assurances from Alan Waxman, Sixth Street CEO, about his ability to bind Sixth Street financially if decisions need to get made. The fund that Sixth Street was investing through, its Tau Fund, is an evergreen fund, as she laid out, so it doesn't have the 5-year, 7-year, or 10-year hold period and demand to sell that a lot of other private equity firms or funds do have. They were very intentional about how that was laid out, and I imagine in the process of the last few months negotiating with Carlisle and the Sounders, but particularly with Carlisle, that a lot of those same conversations were had about what is it like to have a private equity fund, not just investing, but being the majority shareholder of your team, and what you need that fund to guarantee you or to promise to make sure everybody's comfortable with it.
And all in a backdrop, by the way, of the new media deals. I mean, let's not lose sight that media is the number one driver of revenue for the leagues and the teams. So a brand new slate for new partners, more appointment television, where you can be and when, ESPN making a big commitment in terms of putting things on the mothership, as well as money in spend in marketing. All that matters. It's all the things we've seen now, and we're not pivoting yet to college basketball, but it's all the things we've seen backers of women's sports say for a long time. Like, how would you compare Caitlin Clark game on a smaller cable network versus a men's game that's on CBS on Saturday at 1 p.m. or something like that? Yeah. They would say, compare apples to apples, not apples to watermelons. We are starting to get apples to apples comparisons on the men versus the women, and you are seeing significant equality on the women's sports side. And I know we disagree. I think we disagree, and we'll get to it in a little bit, on the possibilities for the NCAA tournament on the women and the men. I'll foreshadow a little bit. I depending on the matchups, and I have not looked at, I know Caitlin Clark has a hard bracket and a hard road, but I have not looked at the exact brackets yet as to who will play who where. I just know this. I would be more excited to see, and any number of the three, and if I'm leaving anybody out, sorry, but I'm just going with me personally now. I would be more excited to see any matchup of Iowa, LSU, South Carolina on the women's side than anything at the current moment on the men's side. If I can get any of those two teams in the championship game of the women's tournament, I don't care who. I don't care if it's Carolina versus Purdue. I guess, you know, Purdue is good. I don't care. I rather see the brand names. What we're starting to see the real effect of players leaving early, and they don't have the brand names yet, and rivalries do not form. But I know I want to see Dawn Staley versus Caitlin Clark, you know, versus LSU and Angel Reese. And you had some pushing and shoving, and you have Kim Mulkey. This is the kind of stuff that excites you going into a game. Whereas, I got Purdue playing North Carolina. Lovely, whatever.
I thought we weren't going
to
talk about
that. That was just me foreshadowing. We can go back to that. That was me foreshadowing.
Put a pin in that for a second. Let's back up on NWSL on Thursday. We reported that the San Diego Wave, Ron Burkle, billionaire Ron Burkle, former Penguins limited partner, had agreed to sell the San Diego Wave. They are the second most valuable franchise in NWSL, according to Kurt Bodenhausen, our colleague, agreed to sell the team in a two-part deal, selling 35% right now for $35 million, and then selling the other 65% at the end of this season for $78 million, the blended average there being $113 million for the full team. That is by far a record. As I said, the previous record for an NWSL team sale was $63 million.
Hold on, everyone. I want to see if I have this right. Let me know if I have this right.
Yeah.
The person putting in the majority of the cash is going to have control of the team. Do I have that right?
That certainly seems to be the way that San Diego is set up.
Oh, okay. Yes. By the way, folks, that's a little foreshadowing also, because I know where Novi Williams is going. But what an interesting way to go about it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so this setup, Burkle will control the team until the second tranche happens. So again, the
Levine Lichtenfeld family. You like to say tranche. You like to say tranche.
Coming in. I do like to say tranche. Burkle will control the team after the first part of the sale, and then after this season, they have that option to buy the other 65%, at which point that team will be wholly owned by the Levine Lichtman family. Kind of an interesting two-part deal, but seems very clean in comparison to what seems to be unfolding in Angel City, the standard bearer commercially for the league so far. But as you and I understand, there's been some tension in the ownership group. It was structured in a very bizarre way, which I'll let you get into. But the news out this week, the board of Angel City has hired has hired Moelis and Company to explore a potential control sale of the team, which could mean that the team has essentially new ownership at some point soon.
All right, I'm writing this down so I don't screw it up. I'd like to be able to say it. All right, so let's give structure right off the bat. Let's set the scene and who are the players. Now, if you followed Angel City, you know, you've heard. There's Alexis Ohanian, founder of Reddit. By the way, when's that IPO this week, right?
It's Thursday.
All right, yeah. So Alexis will have more money this week. Okay. Then you had, so he was a lead investor. Let's make sure we have our terminology right. Alexis, lead investor, put the most money in. And even that is not exactly how we're used to seeing it. It was some personal capital where we understand it's not all that much, you know, but some personal capital. And then also others as part of sort of venture funds that he had, you know, 776 being one of them. So those stakes, one of them he's not even a part of anymore.
One of the funds
can initialize, right? Okay, so we have that. That's just Alexis Ohanian. Then we have the three founding partners of the club. So you would think the three founding partners are the ones who feel earnestly about, you know, the women's sports, the vision for the club, what it was going to be. What do they say? Purpose and something. What's their? I forget what the slogan every time Julie talks.
Yeah,
but Julie Ehrman, Kara Nortman, and of course Natalie Portman, the actor. So those are the founding partners. So what we can glean is that Alexis, as the capital, you know, put in most of the cash, does not have any say over the board, although he is the representative to the league. How weird would it be for Angel City to have to, you know, they cast, we only get one vote, one team, one vote. How weird would it be for Julie, Kara, Natalie to get together and say, whatever issue A, we vote no. But Alexis Ohanian, you know, is like, wait a minute, no, we should vote yes. So he has to go to a league meeting and cast a vote the way the board says, even if he disagrees. The person who put in the most money does not have say in the governance of, at least final say, in the governance of the franchise.
Final say.
That is not a recipe for success.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's surprising. A few people I talked to last week, a number of them said the same thing, that this is a setup that would not be approved now.
Yeah.
And again, I think going back to the way we started this conversation,
yeah, it's only $2 million. Yeah, it's a small investment.
Is growing pains, right? Yeah. The way you set up a $2 million company might not be the way you want the company to be set up when it's a $200 million company, right? And when the stakes are much smaller, I think there is sometimes you can see the decisions getting made when the stakes are smaller, and then suddenly feeling very differently about those decisions when the stakes are significantly higher. And that's where Angel City is. Again, they paid $2 million expansion fee to set this team up. They've obviously paid a lot more to operate it. This is a team that is not profitable, but the team has been. Again, there's ways to look at this, but there's a way to look at this as a huge success story, right? Kurt estimated they had $31 million in revenue last season. It was essentially twice as much as the next closest NWSL team. They are making a lot of money. They've done a very good job on the sales side. They've done a very good job.
Well, you said, hold on. You said they are making a lot of money. I think what you want to say is they are generating a lot of revenue.
Generating a lot of revenue, because the expenses are obviously very high.
The expenses are higher than the revenue, so they are not making money yet.
And we had this conversation with Kurt when he did NWSL valuations, that if you were an NWSL team and you saw these numbers and you saw Angel City making $31 million, which is, again, double the next closest team and 3x or more most of the teams in the league, and still not profitable, I could see a lot of teams looking at that and saying, whoa, okay, so what does it take? So the Angel City was spending a lot and bringing in a lot of money. I think that the structure, the way it was set up, where the person putting in the most amount of money at the start only got one board seat and not control of the board, sets you up for a lot of disagreement. And from what you and I understand, there's been a lot. I won't begin to think that I understand even a little bit of, I know there's been some financial disagreement. I don't know if there's been disagreement about other things. I won't even begin to speculate there. But from folks that I talked to, and I think you got the same from folks you talked to at the end of last week, a lot of people feel like the current setup is untenable. And that leads us to where it seems like we are right now, which is the board, again, not controlled by Alexis, but controlled by the co-founders, hiring a bank, Moelis & Company, to explore a potential stake sale of some sort.
That would include, by the way, important to note, would include control of the board.
It would include
control of the board. Ain't going to make that mistake again.
And from what we understand, Alexis has also signed off on that. He is not planning to, at least right now, from what he told us on the record, not planning to sell equity right now.
I wouldn't sell until I establish the new price point. Then I'll sell.
He did, from what I understand, give essentially sign on the document that allows Moelis & Company to sell a control stake. So that is out there in the market right now. It's certainly messy, right? I think if you're a buyer and you're interested in owning Angel City, you probably have a lot of questions about when you come in, what exactly is your voting power? What exactly is your equity? What if Alexis is staying in, what does that look like? The other women and the other investors, the cap table, we should also mention, Scott, is way larger than these four people.
Oh yeah.
Right. There's more than a dozen former US women's national team players. There are big name pop stars. There are big name actresses. There are big name athletes. It's a big cap table.
They've Celebrity was a big part of what they were selling.
Absolutely. And they've raised money kind of like a tech company more so than a sports team in the past few years. But yeah, I think if you're a buyer and you're interested in potentially buying this control stake, I do think it's not as cut and dry as other team transactions we've seen. And I imagine there are a lot of questions you have to have about what the structure looks like moving forward if you do come in.
Yeah, when we were reporting this, I got to tell you, I just kind of got the feeling like this was akin to the limited partner in a franchise that keeps getting hit up for capital calls. You know, only if you're Alexis Ohanian, you're not a limited partner. You put in the most capital, and yet you have no recourse over how the money is spent. Others have that, and I'm not saying it's right, it's wrong, or the decisions were right or wrong. I'm not saying. I'm just saying that the lead investor did not have the final authority over how money was spent, and the money was going to come out of his pocket. Among those, little birdie tells me, among those looking to acquire the control stake are Mark Lasry, a former part owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. Of course, now has his Avenue Capital Fund looking to invest in sports properties. And I mean, that sort of, I'm a little surprised. I thought there would be a priority placed on a female owner, I got to say, for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Hasn't done the deal yet.
No,
right?
No, he hasn't. But maybe there is a priority. Maybe. But, you know, we heard that Mark is around and there and serious and wants it. And whether or not a deal is consummated, I do not know. I'm sure others will see. But we also know, by the way, because of all the turmoil, you and I were both told that some folks who were approached about possible interest, let's just say, didn't take it seriously. They were not really interested in the possible investment. So, I mean, maybe it happens quickly, maybe it doesn't. Right? Yeah.
This is trickier than just buying a control stake of a lot of teams that end up hitting the market.
Yeah, either way, you're going to have to live with your partners for a while here. And by the way, agree on what the course is moving forward. Like, these are all things you're going to have to work out ahead of time. So
one last thing I'll say on NWSL, and we can move on, or if you want to do something else. But I mentioned that the turnover there of the 15 teams, 13 of them are either expansion teams or have new control owners since 2020. The makeup of that ownership group is also vastly different, right? The folks that are buying in now are either big private equity experience folks, right? Like, which we've seen with Kara in Angel City, with Alan Waxman out in the Bay Area. Some of them are big time traditional other league sports owners, which we've seen in a few places as well. Laura Ricketts, for example, in Chicago. The makeup of the NWSL ownership meetings, the tenor, the experience, the specific kind of expertise has turned over quite dramatically in the last few years in a way that I think is probably extremely beneficial to the league. And I kind of think of it as a much more kind of a speed run version of what the NBA did let's say from 2005 to 2020, where there was a lot of turnover and the makeup of the type of person that was buying into the NBA was changing dramatically. And I think that's part of why Adam Silver and the rest of that league has been very forward thinking and very innovative is because of who's sitting across the table at the owners' meetings. I think the NWSL has kind of done a version of that in its own way in a much shorter amount of time, Scott, in a 5-year period, not a 15-year period.
Right.
And that I think is actually very beneficial both to Jessica Berman, the commissioner, and also to the future of the league as a whole.
Now we had a little preview the other night here in New York, right at Red Bull. You had the Wave, and they were obviously very much in the news, playing Gotham. And again, all interest, they're in the news for the sale. One, you've got the star player, Alex Morgan, who, by the way, scored the late winning goal. So it's a nice little storyline for the league. But also, you need to know what's going on in the ownership ranks of Gotham as well. Carolyn Tish Blodgett, of Tish of the New York Giants, Tish family, coming in as an investor. You and I both expect that to be a starting point for Carolyn, right? We heard there's been strife in that ownership group as well. So you're starting to see a steadying of all the ships. But like you said, it's a maturation process. But it's funny, everywhere we turn, every piece of the puzzle, it's sort of, you're seeing similarities all around. It'd be very interesting after this next group, who else is coming in? Who else is interested? My guess would be, as we've seen the escalation in these franchise values, I think you and I both agree that the sales ain't done. There are going to be some other owners whose eyes are going to go wide and say, is it time for me to cash out?
Yeah, just again, the fact that some of these teams traded for $0, essentially, depending on if they were bought with a larger transaction, right? So the team in Orlando, for example, right? From what I understand, when that team, the MLS team, was sold, the deal included
a drag along.
NWSL team.
My man, Grant Hill.
And the team was not valued very highly in that deal. I think it was maybe even exactly $0. Anytime you see an asset that was valued that low 3 years prior and is now suddenly valued this high, I think it's a logical jump to think that there may be some other people out there thinking, maybe it's my time to get an exit from this and move on.
All right. Now tell me which matchups in the NCAA tournament on the men's side you would be really excited. Like, knowing you, It's a Saturday, let's say Saturday game, and let's say it's New York this week. You're gonna a good running weather. Okay, let's say it's 58 degrees. You have time on your hands. Let's say, I don't know, somebody else in your life may be traveling or plans. You have nothing but free time on a 57-degree Saturday. What two teams are playing that keeps Novi Williams from going on a beautiful 32-mile run?
Nobody.
There you go. But what if LSU was playing Iowa or LSU was playing South Carolina? Would you think about it harder?
Yes. I think if you were asking me to name my dream college basketball matchup, men and women combined.
Yeah,
I think that it's probably Iowa LSU, given all the drama of last year's championship game and where those teams are right now. Yeah,
I'm doing it.
Yeah. Scott's doing the
game. I don't think it was vertically. I think it was horizontally or vertically. I'm going to go horizontally.
Do it at a 45 degree angle.
No. I want to be accurate. Business. I'm going to go horizontally. I'm trying to dig in the memory bank. Somewhere in the medulla oblongata, if you would. I'm going horizontally. And people can see it. You can promote it like this when you put it on Twitter. I'm going to do this. It's this.
I think it's fair to say that this is the most hyped, maybe most anticipated women's NCAA tournament ever. Caitlin Clark has a huge part to do with that, but it's not just her. It's a lot of other things. I also think it's fair to say that the men's college basketball as a sport is in a strange place right now. People are transferring all around. You can leave for the NBA after 1 year, which obviously a lot of people do. You don't get players like Caitlin Clark all that often that are both one of the best or the best in the sport and also stick around in the sport for 4 years in men's basketball like you do often in women's basketball. I think there's a lot of things that are kind of tipping the balance of the scale. I wouldn't say we're at, and maybe this is where you and I disagree, I'm not sure we're at a point yet where, even at a rating standpoint, the women's tournament is ready to...
No, not the tournament. No, I don't want to do tournament. I want to say championship game. If we get Iowa versus LSU, if we can't, I'm not even, like I said, I haven't looked at the bracket, or South Carolina, LSU, or Iowa, either way,
sure.
Two of those teams Can the women's championship game, if it includes two of those teams, outdraw the men's game? I don't care who's it.
I think the answer to that is no.
I say it could. Okay, I say it could.
Yeah. We got the men's final is on CBS.
Anthony Kroupe on line one. Yes, I need Kroupe on this. We don't have enough time in the show for Kroupe.
I think like ESPN versus CBS obviously is a difference in reach for sure. Yeah, I
consider ESPN an over the air network at this point. I really do.
If we get LSU, Iowa, again, I don't know the bracket either. Maybe this is impossible. But if we get two of those three teams in the championship game as well, especially if it's Iowa, especially if Iowa's included.
Yep.
Yes, I think this is going to be the most watched women's college basketball game of all time.
No-brainer, yeah.
Last year's 10 million viewers. And I agree with you. That's way more compelling to me than pick any matchup in men's basketball. I just don't believe that for the majority of the country, for all the places where all these TV ratings happen, that we're quite there yet. And none of that to take away from women's college basketball, which I think is in an amazing place, right? And Caitlin is going to leave, almost definitely going to leave at the end of this year. And there are some really exciting young freshmen, Juju Watkins and Hannah Hidalgo, waiting in the wings. I don't think we're looking at Caitlin Clark leaving college basketball and suddenly the women's game dipping a bit in its interest. I think we have seen a fundamental shift in the way women's college basketball is commercialized moving forward, at least in the near future. But in some ways, I don't even love the comparison, the men's to the women's in that direct way, but I don't think we're quite there yet.
All right. I'm going to mark you down as being wrong right now. Can't wait till we come back.
Hater.
Close the show, my
friend. As we've seen, I am not a TV ratings.
Yeah, I gave you a lamp last time and you were nowhere close.
In any capacity. But we will see, and Scott and I will be breaking that down as both March Madnesses kick off.
They can use March Madness now, the women. For the front, I mean, that's a big deal. They can actually say March Madness.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Novi_Williams.
Every
show is produced by Aaron Greenwald. Thank you very much.
The _ in his Twitter handle.
Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, would like you to know that you can follow the show @Sportacast, which is the hub
NWS
of the Sportico
Cell
Media.